Happy Sunday, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Bite-Sized Blessings. I don't do this very often, but every once in a while, I'd like to ask my listeners, please consider leaving a rating or writing a review wherever you find the podcast. Those ratings and reviews help others find us. And in other exciting news, the podcast has started a Patreon. For those of you who are not familiar with what Patreon is, it's a fundraising platform for creators. I have three main levels at which you can support me, and each level comes with its own rewards. It's not expensive. I have everything from $3 to $10 a month, but please do consider supporting the podcast. As the podcast becomes more successful, I've found that I have greater expenses, so any little bit will help. Please go to patreon.com or go to my website, and on the front page of my website, you'll find a link where you can get more information. So now, to this week's podcast, episode 105. This week, I interview Dr. Douglas Brown. And one of the things I wanted to do on this podcast was introduce people to each other, to introduce people that you, the listener, might not otherwise have the privilege of meeting. And this week, my guest is a doctor of homeopathy. Dr. Brown has such an interesting life trajectory. On his website, which I will provide a link for under the episode show notes, he says, "If anybody had suggested 25 years ago that I would become a full-time practicing homeopath, I would have been mystified and astonished." He was a graduate of Yale University's Family Nurse Practitioner Program in 1987, and at that time was fully committed to the medical model of health and disease upon which his training was based. And so, as many of you listeners are familiar with by listening to this podcast, life has surprises for us. And sometimes we end up in these really strange places, these really unique places that we just could never imagine. And that is exactly what happened to Dr. Brown. So now, episode 105 of Bite-Sized Blessings.
I recently had a case where someone was deeply, deeply distressed about the loss of their cat. But what was interesting about this particular case is that as the cat was getting sicker and sicker with a kidney infection, the patient herself developed a kidney infection. Her identification with the cat was so strong. And, you know, her grief was overwhelming. It was like losing a child. And she identified with the cat in so many ways. Well, I'm a work in progress. The thing that it most engages me right now is the work of healing with homeopathy as my main modality. It's a way in which I feel I'm best used by the cosmos, by the universe, as a way of helping others heal and helping myself grow. I started out as a family nurse practitioner. I always wanted to be a healer in some respect. And I actually, before becoming a family nurse practitioner, worked as a sociologist with American Indian communities. I taught some and did some outreach work and based at Cornell University, was associated with the American Indian Studies program there, but really developed a desire to have more direct contact with communities and not be so much confined to academia. And that's what led me to become a nurse practitioner. And after 10, 12 years of working in the contemporary medical paradigm, just had a sense that something was missing there. The dots weren't being connected between what was going on in people's mental and emotional lives and what was happening in their bodies. And that really intrigued me. And I just felt like there's got to be something deeper here. I know I'm going beyond your question, but I guess who I am relates to that journey, right? To that journey to figure out why is this so unsatisfying, especially with chronic illness. I mean, I was very happy when I could prescribe antibiotics and people would get better from an acute illness. That was great. But the vast majority of times of visits with patients, I felt like I was dealing with something deeper than what the tools I had been given or that I had learned were capable of really handling, of managing. So that led me on a search, and I studied many different modalities. I read about Chinese medicine. I read about hypnotherapy, took courses in thought field therapy, went to a lot of integrative medicine seminars, was trying to find my way. And in this process of trying to find my way, it wasn't anything that I intentionally or consciously chose, but what happened was my son, who was at the time 2 years old, he's now 29, so we're talking a long time ago. When he was 2 years old, he developed an ear infection, which didn't respond to the antibiotics I gave. And it was really quite a serious infection. He was crying much of the time at night, had a fever, was getting dehydrated. And this was going on. And after two rounds of antibiotics, which didn't help, I figured, well, I just have to bring him to an ear, nose, and throat doctor who was going to do one of those tympanostomy things where you puncture the eardrum and place a tube. And I wasn't happy about that because some research had just been coming out about how some long-term sequela of hearing loss could result from the scarring from that. But I figured I didn't have a choice until, as I was about to do that, an acquaintance said, why don't you just try a homeopath? And I had never considered homeopathy as anything serious, but I was desperate. So I brought him to this homeopath. He was a doctor who had come to the United States from India. He had dealt, in retrospect, I found out, with all kinds of tropical illnesses, serious diseases, dengue, malaria, many serious illnesses that he had treated well. But I still didn't really trust him. And when he asked these strange questions about my son's disposition and his earwax, things that seemed to have no connection at all to his current ear infection, my distrust grew even more. And you can imagine my reaction when he said, well, we're going to just give him this remedy, which is belladonna. I said, belladonna, you don't mean deadly nightshade, do you? He said, yes, that's right, deadly nightshade. But he said, no, don't worry. You know, it's so dilute, it doesn't have any toxicity. So I thought to myself, this is crazy. But since I had paid my $40 or whatever, I went and gave my son the concoction, as I called it. And I was blown away by how quickly his ear infection resolved. It seemed to, you know, seemed to get better way faster than the vast majority of infections that I treated clinically with antibiotics. But my son just bounced back so quickly. And I was so amazed that I thought it must have just been a fluke. It couldn't have been from the remedy. So the universe decided that I needed another kick in the butt. And a few months later, my poor son developed another ear infection. And I was traveling with him at the time, but I called him and he asked similar questions. And after a short series of questions, said, oh, he needs the same remedy. Can you get it? I was with him in San Francisco. It wasn't a problem to get it. And once again, he immediately got better. So that made me really, that created a lot of cognitive dissonance, right? Okay, how could this possibly be that something which has no material element in it of the supposedly curative plant, belladonna, if there's no material element in it, how could this have worked? So I began reading, trying to understand it better. And what I read didn't necessarily convince me, but it gave me enough to decide I want to learn this and try it on my own. And so I began self-study, and I began surreptitiously bringing remedies into my clinic jobs where I worked. And occasionally when people would agree, I would prescribe a remedy. And, you know, I had some beginner's luck. Sometimes people got better with it, which gave me enough confidence to want to pursue it more. And a turning point for me came when I met a psychiatrist who's now retired, but he told me that confidentially, I couldn't tell anybody because he might lose his license, but he told me that he sometimes treats his chronic chronically mentally ill patients with homeopathy, and that sometimes that he gets really good results. And I've always had a very strong interest in mental health, and that persuaded me to go to Hahnemann College, which at the time was the best college for homeopathy in the United States, the best homeopathic medical school. So I retrained. It was a four-year process where I really just retrained and became a homeopath.
What a journey. Honestly, I was thinking as you were beginning to explain who you were, I'm going to ask him how he became interested in homeopathy, but you completely answered my thought question. I didn't even get a chance to utter it, and you were on top of it. But what a fascinating journey. And I'm sure, you know, when you were a child, I don't know, when you were a child, what did you envision for yourself? Did you want to be a fireman? Did you just want to be a healer, astronaut?
Well, I think, you know, as a very young child, I was very dreamy. And I don't have actually a lot of great memories of early childhood. I read a lot. I read a lot of science fiction. I wanted to be a sailor at one point, a sailor around the world, an adventurer. But I think by the time, you know, I grew up in the late 60s, I got very involved with the anti-war movement and became a bit of a social activist, you know, by the time I was in high school. And it was at this time that I had inklings that I wanted to be a healer of some kind. The thought of medicine, of becoming a doctor, was very strong in my mind in high school. But when I got to college, I was very lucky to get a scholarship to go to Colgate University in central New York State. And I became very intrigued by some of the faculty in the philosophy and religion departments, and also in sociology and political science, and issues around world hunger and development issues. And so that derailed my pre-med ambition. So because I there were just too many courses about the world and what was going on in the world and in philosophy and religion for me to take the organic chemistry. And so I indulged myself in those interests. And that is what then led me to pursue Native American studies in graduate school and rural sociology. So it was a bit of a roundabout way before I finally got back to my desire to be a healer. You know, I grew up in a very chaotic, actually, household. My dad was perhaps the more religious of my parents, and he grew up in a Jewish family and occasionally took me to temple, but he became mentally ill and really was not an active part of my life after I turned five or so. He really struggled a lot. My mom was a refugee from the Holocaust. She fled Vienna after the Nazis took power in Austria, went to England. But, you know, although she was persecuted because of her Jewish ancestry, she herself was not religious at all, not Jewish at all, really. And her father actually had converted to Christianity. But she took me occasionally to the Society for Ethical Culture, I remember, in New York City. Very interesting. And I remember enjoying that, but we didn't go very often. So, no, it was not a religious household.
Would you explain homeopathy to someone who's never heard of it before? A newbie. How would you explain it to a newbie?
You know, Kirsten, it depends a lot on how much time we would have. You know, because there's the 15-second elevator talk. There is more the 3-minute, very casual conversation talk. And then there is the more detailed talk. You know, so I can kind of go through those if you'd like, because it's you know, so the 15-second elevator talk is, well, it's It's a system of medicine that is very individualized and aims to heal people from the inside out by stimulating people's own capacities for healing, period. Yeah, that's what it is, right? If I had a little bit more time, say I had 5 to 10 minutes to talk, I would say I would, you know, start with that, but I would go on to say that one of the great insights of homeopathy, and which everything around it is built, is that everyone is an individual, and people's symptoms originate from something that is traumatized or distorted within, that needs to become into alignment, that needs to come into balance. And every symptom that we have, whether it's mind or body, actually is a result, a consequence of that disturbance in our own ability to self-regulate. We call that the vital force. That's a kind of an old-fashioned term, but it's, from my point of view, it's an aspect of the soul. It's something that's non-material. It's energetic. It's connected to our energy field. And the most important thing to consider about it is that it recognizes that the symptoms we have in our mind and in our body are connected, that everything comes from one single disturbance. That is, we are one whole unit, one unitary whole. And that's, you know, as has been pointed out so often, the word health comes from an old English word meaning whole. And so homeopathy's great gift is that it recognizes the holistic nature of our being. So that's, you know, that's the 5 minute or 10 minute version.
You know, around homeopathy, I've heard it said multiple times by many different people that one of the ideas or concepts is that like cures like. Do you find that to be true?
Yes, that's a very important principle. Like cures like. And it seems so counterintuitive to us, right? Because from our earliest ages, we've been inculcated with the idea that if you have a fever, you take an antipyretic, right, to bring the fever down, right? If you have pain, you take an analgesic to take away the pain. If you have an infection, you take an antibiotic, right, or an antiviral. So we have been thoroughly indoctrinated in the idea that if you are sick, the important thing is to oppose it with something that will do the opposite of what the sickness does, right? So to hear that like cures like, even though we're told it comes from Hippocrates, it seems very counterintuitive, right? And it took me, and that was very hard for me to swallow before I just can continually expose to the fact that it works, the experience that it works. I find, by the way, that I never try to persuade people that homeopathy works, because I know it never would have persuaded me until I witnessed it, until I experienced it. But it is based on this principle that like cures like. It turns out that if we introduce to a person the substance that has an informational map and energy that is similar to what the patient is experiencing, that exposure will help release it from the patient and bring that person back into a state of equilibrium. It's not a static equilibrium. It's a dynamic equilibrium. All of life really is movement and change, but it's a kind of energy that is resonating with the energy of the remedy.
Just as not an aside, but can you give an example of where that would work?
Yeah, sure. I mean, what came to mind just now again is belladonna, since I happened to mention it as an acute remedy for my son 27 years ago. So belladonna, deadly nightshade, is in the family of nightshade plants, or what we call the Solanaceae plants. It turns out that if you were to eat the alkaloid, or get poisoned by deadly nightshade, you would develop a kind of delirium. You would get a lot of blood rushing to the head. There'd be a lot of cerebral congestion into the organs of the head, like the ear. There'd be a lot of redness, a red face. There could be hallucinations. There could be a lot of pain. Could be a lot of headache. It could be a fever. So these are the symptoms of intoxication. Well, if you give someone with those symptoms that are arising not from belladonna intoxication, but they have those symptoms, if you give that person the remedy belladonna, the potentized belladonna, the spirit of belladonna, then the vital force in that patient will recognize the disturbance and be able to counteract it by, and, you know, will navigate its way through it and come into a place of healing where those symptoms resolve. I recently had a case where someone was deeply, deeply distressed about the loss of their cat. And, you know, many people are deeply grieved by the loss of a pet, a cat. You can have a great attachment to a cat. But what was interesting about this particular case is that as the cat was getting sicker and sicker with a kidney infection, the patient herself developed a kidney infection. Her identification with the cat was so strong. And, you know, her grief was overwhelming. It was like losing a child. And she identified with the cat in so many ways. So the remedy that I gave her was, it's called lacfelinum. It's made from a drop of cat's milk, potentized, and it cured her kidney infection and cured her back pain. And it allowed her to go through the grief process of losing her cat in a much more painless, much, much less painful way. I think before I go into examples, I'd just like to share a related aspect of this, which is that as a homeopath, many of us come to expect miracles daily. I expect these remedies, which have no material substance in them at all, to bring people to a place of growth and health. And patients often react as if it was a miracle. And I am a little bit nonchalant at this point because I've been doing this now for, you know, more than 20 years. So I kind of expect a miracle. When the miracles don't happen, that's kind of when I start taking notes, because it means I haven't gotten the remedy right. And I have plenty of patients like that where it takes many, many sessions to zero in on exactly what the remedy is. So I'm in my consciousness, I have more the non-miracles, because that's what I don't expect. I expect a miracle. But since you asked for a miracle, I'll share one. I mean, this maybe isn't that dramatic, but it's in my mind since the patient just came to me a few days ago. She's a relatively young woman. She's 37 or 38, and she has just been feeling so stuck. She actually has a pretty decent job. She works for her mom in a spa here in Portland. But she has a lot of grief from a relationship that didn't work out after like 8 years. And she ultimately would like to be a parent. And, you know, her biological clock, she feels, is ticking to some degree. And she just doesn't feel fulfilled. And yet she just does not know how to move on, did not know how to move on in her life. Just all the doors just seem closed. And she just didn't know how to get out of this stuck feeling. And it had been going on for years. And I'd given her a few different remedies, and some helped, some. But basically, this stuck sense of not moving forward in her life just persisted. Until one session, it was maybe our fourth or fifth session, I gave her the remedy made from argon, which is a noble gas. You know, it's an element in the periodic table. And one aspect of these remedies, the noble gases, is this feeling of, you know, doors are closed, you're all alone, you're isolated. You know, the noble gases, since they're elements in the 18th column of the periodic table, their outer shell is filled, right? Every electron place is filled with an electron, so it cannot bond easily. It doesn't bond with other elements, these noble gases. And so I gave her argon. And the next visit, she was like completely transformed. She was so excited. She was planning this trip to Costa Rica and a festival. She was just excited about life. You know, it just seemed like all the doors of life were just open to her. And stuck was the last thing she was feeling. And it was just a very dramatic change in her inner experience of life. You know, it's very beautiful to see. You know, I often can tell right away within the first, even before somebody starts speaking, you know, if they've had the right remedy or not, because their energy pattern changes, their expression changes. They might look younger. You know, it's a lovely thing to see that happen.
That's wonderful. I think, you know, a lot of people consider physical sickness, you know, having a kidney infection or having a cold that won't go away, or to be when you would need a remedy. But in fact, homeopathic remedies can be used for lots of different reasons.
Right. Right.
So for this woman, she was feeling stuck. For someone else, you know, of course, it could be grief or sorrow. Or a kidney infection.
Or it could be fear, anxiety. I have a lot of patients with, you know, especially since the pandemic, there's so much fear, so much anxiety, and so much sense of social isolation that imposed on many of us.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's kind of why I started this podcast, because I wanted to remind people that there was a lot of goodness and beauty in the world, and magic and miracles are happening every day, as you said, So it's good to have these reminders, I think, and have these conversations with people who have experienced miracles in so many different forms, because everyone has their own idea of what a miracle looks like. Mine, of course, is some epic thing. It's like some sort of amazing show tune or musical on a stage where, you know, there's stars sparkling and glitters everywhere. That's my idea. But other people, their idea is healing or friendships or their parent. There's room everywhere for every kind of miracle, I've learned. I've certainly figured out that I'm very ignorant when it comes to miracles, because I didn't know that all these other miracles existed.
Well, Kirsten, aren't we all? Because really, miracles are basically phenomena that our current paradigm does not have explanatory power for, right? And for me, one of the things that keeps me glued to my homeopathic seat, as it were, is a front row view into phenomena of the new paradigm that's emerging. And it seems to me that the central idea of the new paradigm that is struggling to emerge, that is in the process of being birthed right now, is about the primacy of consciousness. Right? The primacy of awareness, of consciousness, that we can just even think of a remedy, you know, that somebody could actually write the name of a remedy and a potency and put a glass of water over it with the intention of drinking that water. And then that intention and that act of drinking that water will actually heal the person, right? That's crazy, right? Crazy by our materialist paradigm, but I see it work often, right? And I call these remedies noetic remedies, right? Noetic meaning having to do with consciousness, right? Because that's really what we're doing with, and it has to do with quantum entanglement, right? It has to do with the fact of paying attention to something will affect it, right? So these are things that we're just at the dawn of coming to understand. Right. And I feel as a homeopath, I get to participate in making that kind of paradigm shift active in myself and hopefully in my patients, too, when they really consider what is this that just happened? How did I suddenly become unstuck by taking this pellet that had nothing actually in it except sugar? Right. Right.
Well, that's so fascinating, because just last week in my interview with Tiago, episode 104, we talked about consciousness and quantum entanglement. And I always go back to this idea of the Big Bang and everything emerging or exploding out of this. This is it's theoretical, because how can we are testing for it. There is some evidence for the Big Bang, but everything was connected at one time. It was all in this tiny little singularity of possibility. And so because of that, you know, we were all connected at one time. So why wouldn't we be connected to
that remedy belladonna and have it work for us? Why wouldn't we speak to argon gas and put it under our water or capture some argon gas, which is impossible, but you know what I'm saying? Put it next to our water glass and utilize it that way. I think the new paradigm and this idea of figuring things out, it touches everything. It's going to touch everything. And there's something very uniquely and beautifully mystical about it. Because you can't just go out and grab it. It's not something that's tangible. But I like to equate it kind of with Star Wars and, you know, the midichlorians and the force that surrounds everything. It's kind of like that. We're discovering our own force, which makes it magical and miraculous and absolutely beautiful and filled with potential. I think it's super exciting.
Yeah. And another exciting aspect of it, Kirsten, is that it brings home that everything that we share our planet with, that we share our cosmos with, really has some kind of a soul, some kind of a mind, some kind of an awareness, some kind of a consciousness, right? That, you know, when we do, as homeopaths, we do what are called provings. Proving is where we take a substance that we do not yet know of its healing potential, of its medicinal value. We turn it into a remedy through this process of what we call trituration. It basically is successive dilution of the substance. We then take it into our cells and we observe the effects it has, both on our level of our body, at the level of emotions, at the level of thought, and in our dreams. We journal these. Then we come together as a group and we see what common themes come up, what common symptoms come up. And then that becomes the basis for its prescription for people who spontaneously come to us with those issues and themes. And then we know, oh, this reminds me of when I proved such and such a plant or such and such a mineral or such and such an animal. And we then prescribe it. But in this process, you know, we learn to really use all of our senses to understand the experience of the substance itself, you know, and I'm still not quite sure what that means. I recognize there's a risk of projecting human thoughts and feelings onto things that aren't human, but there's also a humility in that, right? That humans are not the only species that have thoughts, feelings, experiences, sensations, right? And I trust that. I trust that we are not necessarily, we are not at the pinnacle of spiritual evolution. You know, we are actually newbies in this universe. We have a lot to learn from many other voices in our natural world. And when we participate in this process of deep listening, you know, listening with our hearts even more than our minds, we stand to gain a lot of growth.
That's so beautiful. Thank you. I just interviewed and produced a podcast with this gentleman called Four Arrows, who has worked with Indigenous and was adopted by the Lakota. And I told him during the course of our interview that I pick up rocks every once in a while. And I always ask the rock, I say, do you want to come with me? And 95% of the time, the rock says no. So I put it back. 5% say yes. So I have them. They're in storage now, poor rocks. But I said, I keep waiting for them to trust me enough to talk to me. And he said, oh, just give it time. They'll know when the time's right and they'll start talking to you. And I was like, yay, I'll just be wait and be patient.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
So funny.
And that does bring to mind another case, another interesting case, if I could share, because it was a case of granite. And this is a very lovely man, but going through a lot of pain because his marriage is in the process of breaking up and they have a child together. But one thing I noticed in my meeting with him is how painfully difficult it was for him to express himself. It was, I would ask him a question and I would just wait, wait, and wait. And finally, a very short answer would come. And he would also have episodes of, I would hear from him and from his wife, how he would have these episodes of anger that would then erupt, right? But much of the time he was just holding everything in. And his remedy was made from granite. And with the remedy, I was almost, I was astounded at the last visit with him. He's doing great. He said he's got involved with an acting group, a theater group, and he's playing multiple roles in this play. I was blown away, because I just couldn't imagine that, you know, who had so much trouble speaking, so much trouble expressing, and now he's involved in acting multiple roles and also doing dance. You know, I was like, is this the same person that we started with? He's very happy. It was just amazing. Okay, so granite. Yeah. So yeah, stones have inner lives, right? Which are so far removed from our human lives. Think of the time scale of a boulder or piece of granite, right? You know, we are living our lives at this hugely fast pace, which, you know, for us, it's like the life of a flea or a mayfly from a granite perspective, right? So they can take all the time in the world to answer a question. If you're a stone, you don't have to answer a question right away. You can wait. For sure.
Yeah. I think what's really interesting about, you know, all this is the stone. I really do have a deep feeling that the stones, the trees, the waterways, the rivers, even petals, animals, they're all waiting for us to get with the program and understand the greater picture, which is, yes, we can be in community and conversation. We're just waiting for you to figure it out.
Yeah. They're waiting very patiently, and hopefully we'll learn before our planet is decimated, completely destroyed.
They're very patient. Thank God. Thank you for listening to episode 105 of Bite-Sized Blessings and my conversation with Dr. Douglas Brown. Intrepid adventurer as he is, following his path no matter where it led. I need to thank the creators of the music used for this episode. Music L. Files, Otis Galloway, Alexander Nakarada, Frank Schroeder, and Edvardis Sen. For complete attribution, please see the Bite-Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, you'll find links to groovy artists, musicians, creators, and of course, links to Dr. Brown's website, as well as to articles that he's written that I think you'll find interesting. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Please share this podcast with every single human being you know. No, that's not my request, but yes, please share this podcast. Get the word out. Tell everyone about it. Be shameless. Okay, back to our regularly scheduled programming. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Dr. Doug. Be open to the mystery and the path. Be open to new ideas. Be open to the universe and what it wants to show you, what path it wants you to follow, and then you just sit back and enjoy the ride.